What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 75 of Value Town. I'm Chairman V, and excuse me, gosh, I don't know what happened there. We've got the full crew back, got Noxious, Raynette, and myself, and we've got a special guest today, Mr. Yagut. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Been a huge fan of your decks and just your play for a long time. I watch your stream actually quite a bit too, so really excited to get a chance to talk specifically about the Rogue class today, because we're going to be taking a look at that like we did last week with Priest. So yeah, definitely excited about that, man. So we'll also be talking about a lot some of the news, guys. There were some things that popped up recently just with Hearthlytics disbanding and some news with Orange leaving Archon. So I figured we touched a little bit on that because there was some discussion just kind of revolving. It's like a little bit of just Hearthstone esport teams versus, I guess, having teams of names with lesser known names, and just how, you know, whether that's even viable or not. So I figured we should just have that discussion with Ray here. And we have a couple other people that are just going to be joining us via audio for the segments. But yeah, overall, guys, how's your week been? Noxious, what you been doing Hearthstone-wise?
Honestly, I played a lot of goofy decks. I mean, I explored the old school, you know, Malagos Druid. I tried some interesting rogue, like, there's a lot of rogue builds I feel that haven't been touched too much.
Yeah.
Because everybody's been so focused around Miracle Rogue.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see that some people are going back to experimenting. Like, I'm seeing more and more of the, you see, like, people trying some kind of tempo rogue. You see dragon rogue coming back. Like, there's a lot of rogue stuff coming back, and that's kind of what I've been working on as well.
Yeah,
for fun.
No, there's lots of cool stuff going on with the Rogue. That's kind of why I thought it'd be great to do a Rogue episode this week. Ray, how about you, man? What you been up to Hearthstone wise or just generally? Oh, can't hear you, man. You're muted.
Yeah, still muted.
Yeah.
Oh, no. There we go.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, I can hear you now.
All right, cool. Yeah, I've been good. I had a bunch of events kind of back to back to back. So it kind of made me slow down on finishing work. So since I've been back, I've been trying to catch up on all of that. And there was a lot of esports stuff outside of Hearthstone happening with the League of Legends spots that went up for sale, plus all the Counter-Strike stuff that happened. So I was kind of working a lot for, like, during all of that. And, you know, just didn't get a chance to, like, stream much or play the game much. So that's kind of what I've been doing.
Hearthstone? Tempo Storm LCS?
I mean, not this split,
okay.
Obviously.
Okay.
In the future, hopefully.
That'd be obviously huge news. That'd be really, really cool. And Mr. Yagut, how about you, man? This week, what you been playing on your stream?
Mostly it was Hunter and Rogue, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At the end of the season, I played some Shaman, Face Shaman. A lot of people will hate me for that, I guess.
You're dirty. Yeah.
So okay, finished kind of high with it as well, but yeah, mostly I was playing a Hunter with Doom Cells.
Okay,
and a lot of Rogue.
What was your end of season rank?
I finished number 4 in A, and number 10 EU.
Okay, all right, nice.
That's
man.
Pretty good.
Got a good number of points. That's always awesome. Of course, Space Shaman. That's what people tend to always do at the very end of the season, just to get a few more points, it feels like. All right, well, why don't we kick things off, talk about a little bit about the news. Again, like I mentioned before, Hearthlytics announced that, actually last week, sometime last week, they decided to disband, and RJ Epperson, the owner, released a statement talking about it. And I figured it'd be nice to have RJ to come on and really just talk with us, just give us a little bit of a... You know, just I guess why the decision was made, maybe just his look or outlook on just how Hearthstone, being a team owner in Hearthstone, is, and maybe a discussion with Ray too. Obviously, Ray's a team owner too, and just kind of seeing what some of the challenges are. So, I want to welcome to the show RJ Epperson. Hey, RJ, how's it going, man?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, man. Well, thanks for taking the time and joining us, you know, here on Value Town. But it's hard. I'm definitely sorry to hear that the team is disbanding, because I mean, it was great seeing you guys at DreamHack, you know, and you know, watching you guys just rooting for each other, you know, Frozen getting pretty far. So yeah, I'm sorry about that news.
That's all right.
Yeah. I just kind of wanted to have you on and just maybe talk a little bit about, you did mention in the, your release, the message or the whole statement that you released, just some of the challenges you had, and wanted to, ask you some of those and maybe have you give us some just a little bit more details as to what Hearthstone or what challenges Hearthstone poses, because it sounds like you're still looking to possibly be a team owner in another game. Is that correct?
Yeah. As it stands, we've just stopped doing Hearthstone because we took a strategy that was different from that of what most of the teams that are seeing success doing, like Tempo Storm and Archon, recruiting players who are, can be a sustainable household name, and they have streams and they provide viewership numbers and stuff like that. We recruited really just people who didn't, weren't known to the scene, other than maybe Jab, and their streams weren't that big. And we really banked on the prospect of them winning big or performing well or just growing their stream. Mm-hmm. And it came down to a lot of times that we were struggling getting the players to do sponsorship activities and things that we were wanting to pay them to do. And we just failed to get them incentivized properly. And part of the incentivization process is we need to figure out what our return is to incentivize them. Like, what's our return on paying them? And the return just didn't meet what the investment cost asked for. So we didn't see long-term potential in that model. So we, stopped doing it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, for those of you not familiar, I guess how teams make money just in this space or just in the esports space, a lot of it comes from sponsorships. So, like big organizations sponsoring teams, and that's kind of what he's alluding to. So, sponsors, they have certain, requirements that they need in terms of impressions or views and that sort of thing. And that's kind of where streaming comes into place. Reynad, you could probably talk some on that too. I mean, for Tempo Storm, the main source of revenue is sponsorships, correct?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, it's close, but yeah, overall, yeah, for most teams, it's like all of the revenue. So, sponsorship activations. You basically, I mean, I can go on and on and on this subject. I guess I'm gonna need specific questions, but yeah, that's how it works basically.
So I guess if we're talking about just esports, especially in Hearthstone specifically, and we're comparing it to say let's just say traditional sports, right? I guess RJ, your approach to trying to get the best players and just have them just be the best at the game that they're playing, and trying to create success in that fashion, or just at least exposure and notoriety and that sort of thing. Is it impossible in Hearthstone for us to be in that position? I know Reynad's probably talked about this a little bit, but is it impossible just to have players focus on being good at the game and having teams somehow building a brand from that? Like a brand strong enough that sponsors will, be able to get value from that? Because that's kind of what we see with the other teams right now, in traditional sports.
In Hearthstone alone, I don't think so. But if you have other games to leverage in terms of income and revenue sources, a lot of companies, esports teams, just touch Hearthstone because it's a good advertising platform. It's a good market to touch. There's a lot of money flying around, and it all sits at the top. It's just like the wealth distribution in any country. The more money is at the top, then the middle class can even handle. So it's just in Hearthstone, the results are too inconsistent, and being good at the game, we didn't know this going in, but I had an inkling that that might be the case. But we wanted to try a model out, and it wasn't successful. So we, just kind of found that out.
Ray, what are your
thoughts? In my opinion, I was just going to say, in my opinion, clearly, I don't think it's possible.
Okay.
All right, makes sense.
Yeah. Ray, what about you? What do you think?
I think it's ridiculously ignorant to have the question start with compared to real sports. Why are you comparing an iPad game based on World of Warcraft to real sports? Like, why? Just because people use esports when talking about shit on Twitch does not mean that everything is supposed to follow this NFL model.
Right.
Hearthstone is a lot more similar to poker and Magic, and you have groups of friends testing together in Magic, and you have groups of friends all having a piece of each other in poker tournaments, but you don't have teams. You just have certain organizations that stand to profit from marketing in the poker space, like PokerStars, for example, that will sign individual players based on exposure. So
yeah. I guess it's really, I guess, getting a clarification on what team means in Hearthstone.
That's exactly right, man. Right, this is the thing this is my number one thing that tilts the shit out of me. You have no idea when it comes to the business side of Hearthstone. The number one thing in the business side of Hearthstone. There's a bunch of people that like to watch Twitch and they like to follow video games and they want to do something more with it. They have some money they can put together. They find a friend of theirs that they want to make a business partner, and they're like, okay, let's make a business. And then they think, okay, well, what kind of business do we do? And they think of the sexy stuff that they see when they watch Twitch, which is teams. Teams get a lot of exposure in other video games. Mm-hmm. When you like think Hearthstone, you think Tempo or Archon or whatever. When you think like Counter-Strike, you think Luminosity or Fnatic or Cloud9. It's like, so what I'm saying is everyone goes into this trying to be a team owner for no fucking reason. And it's just because they don't know what else to do as far as starting a business in the space, even though being intimately familiar with the finances of every single branch of this industry, being a team owner is far and away the stupidest thing you could do going into it. It is.
Okay.
It's not only the hardest thing to build with the lowest profit margins, but it's the most competitive on top of that because of so many teams like that. It's massive, like, land grab for players. It takes such a robust staff to even leverage players that you sign. Mm-hmm. If you can even sign the best talent, and then it as a business, it's so multifaceted, and there's so many different areas where you can fuck up where you're just bleeding money because of it. Mm-hmm. That it's really tough to make this engine that's flowing smoothly and generating revenue. That's true for any game. And the fact that people do it in Hearthstone of all games is so ridiculous for me. Like, if any team comes into Hearthstone as the first space they approach, and the reason they do it is because the market value of players is very cheap, you know? You're not going to start with Counter-Strike if you and a buddy want to start a team, because right. You can't afford to play six people 10K plus a month for a world-class team. But on Hearthstone, it's most players are unsponsored. Anybody, there's 1,000 players with good results that they can put on a resume, and then you'll pay them a couple hundred bucks a month because it's whatever, and then there you go. You have a team, you're a business owner. But obviously it's not going to have any return, because if I'm a sponsor and I want to market to the Hearthstone fan base, where am I going to go to? Am I going to go to lower level players that haven't proven themselves yet? Or am I going to go to not just teams, but individuals that have these massive numbers that I can quantify? I know what I'm paying for. I know what return I'm getting. So yeah, well, it's.
So, the reason I brought up sports, even though you think it's ignorant, is that the sponsors for sports teams or for the NFL, or I mean, just depending on which one you're talking about, it has a lot to do with just the team, right? The team organization and the brand and, where they can put, or
not at all.
How the general public values that team or the brand. No,
not,
you don't
know. Not at all how it works.
Okay.
No. That kind of brand awareness translates into merch sales. The big money is like in basketball, for example, the money coming in is not from sponsors to teams and then teams pay the players. That's not the business model. The money comes from individual big brands that Nike or Under Armour or whoever will go to and pay hundreds of millions of fucking dollars and have them promote their shoe for 10 years. That's where the money goes. And that dwarfs the salaries from teams by like tenfold. It's not even comparable. Like, the individual players build a brand, because if I'm a kid, I'm not going to cheer for a corporation. I'll cheer for my state, and I'll cheer for this team because it represents my state. But the guy I'm going to look up to is, like, you know, whatever, the Michael Jordan of the game. And that's the guy that I'm going to trust to tell me what shoes are best. So that's what the sponsors will target.
Okay, so the teams just basically are a function of just the whatever the competitive structure is.
Exactly. Right. The competitive structure is what makes teams make money, right? If there's an actual league where you have equity and you basically have this asset, you have this team in this league, you have a franchised spot, then you make your money off of a portion of revenue from broadcasting rights that you sell. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's basically the model there.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, getting back to you, RJ. I mean, you know, you're talking about maybe getting into other esports. Like, what other games are you thinking about?
We have no idea.
Oh, just no idea. Okay, just really, I guess analyzing it. I guess at this.
Yeah,
point.
I mean, yeah. I have some options, but it's not anything we're moving on yet. I'm kind of just taking a break from. We're kind of just taking a break, stepping back, trying to figure out what we're doing, because it's just the space is. Originally, we went into Hearthlytics with a product in mind, because, you know, most of the teams have products to back up just the team, because the team is not a product itself, not a good one anyway.
So when you say product, are you talking about like a website that has a lot of content, or?
It's a service, actually. It was a program that we developed ourselves, put a lot of time and money into it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was a data oriented product, but we haven't launched it, and it's, you know, not ready. So still might do that as an individual business, but not doing the esports surrounding it anymore, just because Hearthstone, but.
Okay. For a lot of the players that were on your team, I mean, you know, you guys did make a really deep run in last year's championship. I mean, you had two representatives in the finals, which is, the grand finals, but just, you know, just on the at BlizzCon, which was really impressive, actually, as a team.
Kind of?
That's not impressive? That's impressive.
Yeah, it's not that impressive. Nah. It's Hearthstone, man. Anyone can get there. Wow. Anyone can get there.
Okay.
If they play well enough and they run well, they're going to get there.
Yeah,
I'm telling you right
about
now.
That quite a bit, I think, on the show.
Actually, Yagut, what do you think about that statement? Like, anybody can get there? Like, what do you, as a player, what do you think? Oh, can't hear you, buddy.
I'm not here.
I can't hear him.
No, he's muted.
Oh, no, he's talking. Uh-oh. Well, I guess we're going to have to figure out the audio there. I don't know what's going on with his audio. Ray, I think I know your feelings on it. do you think Hearthstone is? Isn't that kind of state where literally one of 100 people could be there? Or
it's much more than 100.
More than 100.
It doesn't mean it's random. That's still like, you know, probably only like 500 people out of the, you know, 40 million that have an account for the game could do it. But you know, that's still. That's still a lot. You're going to get a mostly new top 16 most of the time.
Right.
I mean, that's, I mean, you know, when we talk more about like the rebuttal articles and stuff like that, I want to go, because I don't fully agree with
what Niger said
that either, but okay. I'll save it for later, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, RJ, thanks for, you know, definitely hopping on and, you know, spending the time and at least talking with us or discussing just the Hearthlytics thing with us. And, you know, definitely wish you luck, you know, with any other endeavors you have, particularly in esports. If you get into another game, that would be really, really cool to see you, you know, do well.
Yeah, I think making a product's like a really smart way to go. Literally anything that's not being a team owner, like any other branch, is actually a lot of money to be made in esports.
Yeah, a lot of our intention was settled in the fact that I wanted to get to know the space better also from a product standpoint, like a product marketing standpoint. Just learning more about the scene from inside is probably the best way to do it. So that's another reason we just, you know, did this.
Well, all right, man.
Thanks, man.
Talk to you later.
Appreciate it.
Bye. All right, cool. So trying to figure out if okay, so Mr. Yagu, can you hear us?
Yep.
Okay. Gosh,
I'm great.
Yeah, good, good. Okay. Well, actually, I just want to get your thoughts. I mean, because I'm not sure if you heard or not. Just wanted to get your thoughts on the whole statement that you know, making it, I guess, to top eight of BlizzCon isn't necessarily that impressive because a lot of people can do that.
No, I don't think everyone can do it. Like, it's not so easy. It mostly comes down to deck building. Mm-hmm. And it makes a huge difference if you put like one card or two cards difference into your deck. Mm-hmm. Like, right. For example, if you put Harrison, if you put situational cards in, it's comes down to the meta basically, and if you find out what the meta is, then you have a better chance to come to the top eight.
Sure, like okay. I couldn't do it, but like if, for instance, if you go for like, as Rand mentioned, say let's say 500 people who have a very similar skill level, of all these guys, it like if you had to pick eight, would it matter who you picked, or would these 500 top level players all have an equal chance if you just pit them against one another with their ability to read the metagame? Like, that's kind of what we're getting at.
It wouldn't be an equal chance.
One of 40 million, right? Because that's obviously exaggerated. Like, if you take this small pool of high-level players, would you put them all kind of on the same odds of getting there?
I mean, it's not an equal chance.
Some
players are better.
Yeah,
it's the difference between having, like, a 0.5% chance if you're, like, the bad one, and if you're one of the best in that pool of 500, you have like a 0.7 chance, which is still like 40% higher odds, but it's still shitty odds.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on and let's have Nidra come on the show too. Kind of wanted to talk a little bit about just having these lesser known players and just how that works in the Hearthstone community, as well as some news with the Orange leaving Archon and kind of what that means with Archon. So let me welcome to the show Nidra, who is, for a lot of people that are in the Hearthstone community know who he is, but he's a journalist writer for GhostoGamers.net, and he's been so since the beta, or even before that. I think Nidra wrote for even StarCraft 2. I think he did StarCraft 2 for a while too. Nidra, yeah, welcome to the show.
Nidra's dead.
Nidra's dead. Okay,
we seem to have a lot of either mic problems or just AFK issues.
Okay. Well, anyways, we'll have to talk to him. Let's talk a little bit about just the articles, I guess, leading into it before we hop on.
Go ahead.
So,
yes.
So Splice Shavek is a writer or wrote an opinion piece on Splice.gg. That basically talked about just the general, I guess, team environment and just esports environment of esports. And this is all his opinion, of course. And it was all pertaining to just the Hearthlytics news, as well as Orange leaving Archon and this presumption that Archon's getting away from esports altogether. And he was, you know, basically trying to, at least his opinion of it was that a couple things, that the Hearthstone Championship Tour is not structured properly to I guess, help with storylines for these lesser-known players, you know, and some of the fault of casters and, you know, production, I guess, involved. Another thing was also that, I guess, you know, journalists, I guess, aren't higher, you know, I guess, highlighting them enough as well. And, you know, basically, you know, pointing—I wouldn't say pointing the finger at the community or anything like that—but basically, he doesn't know how we actually get these lesser-known names to the forefront, and there has to be a way to do it. So we obviously aren't doing it well enough. So that was kind of like his opinion, you know, like that was his piece, and really trying to figure out like how can we improve this and that sort of thing. And Nidra wrote a rebuttal to that, but I kind of want to talk about the original first, which was the Splice. Like, what do you guys think of that piece? Did you agree with a lot of things in that piece, or did you think it was just wrong altogether?
Right. Well, I think one of the big mistakes that the writer made is the assumption that it's completely on the shoulder of the community to make a player known, right? And it's not up to the player himself to kind of push himself in that spot. You see a lot of players who are very good at the game who just have no interest whatsoever on producing content, streaming. You know, like there was a mention about some players refusing to do sponsorship activities, right? Well, that's kind of it. Like if some players are willing to do that, then is it our fault that they're not known? There will be the occasional outlier. Well, they'll simply get popular out of seemingly nowhere, but they still have to get out there or be seen. Even though they're skilled, like a lot of players are skilled, but you don't hear about them nearly as much as quote unquote they deserve to. But like, is it to the community's fault if the player doesn't put himself out? I don't know, it just seems so odd. Like that approach sounds a little odd. It's like everybody owes him popularity,
right?
I don't know.
Ray, your thoughts?
Seemed like somebody was salty that they paid for some players and then they didn't get as much recognition as they hoped they would. That article was very frustrating to read in a lot of ways, and I agree with a lot of the things in like Nidra's rebuttal about it. But yeah, it's the thing about Hearthstone is it actually has probably the most successful individuals. I can't think of a better game for making individuals known than Hearthstone. You see that in guys like Crip and Trump that, you know, just stream from their home and get higher viewership than most tournaments and other games. You know, Maz's stream is big, my stream's big, Forsen's stream's big. And these are all streamers I'm mentioning, but there's big YouTubers as well. Trolden, like anybody that's actually been willing to work for like 12 hours a day. And Yagi's a great example too. You put so many hours into making content, and so does Noxious. Like all of us do. Chanman, right now you're making content. You know why we're known is because we actually put the work in. And would I prefer to be paid just as much to just like sit on my ass and play a fun game all day? Yeah, that would be fantastic.
But dream,
the reality of the situation is, no, you have to do boring shit like get heckled by 12-year-olds for 8 hours at a time, or grind a lot of hours into video editing, testing different kinds of content and seeing what works. Like, no, you're not going to sit on your fucking ass like an entitled douchebag and get paid money because you're better than these streamers at the game. Well, no shit, you're better. It's because you're sitting on your ass playing a video game for 12 hours a day. You're not actually contributing or giving anything back. It's like, do you think the community cares which player wins out of 8? Kind of. They care if the player they follow wins. But it's not like a lot of players in the early days of Hearthstone, they would like win a tournament and then feel like they contributed something to the community. It's like, not really. The guy that made the tournament did, right? Because he gave people something to watch. Right. But somebody had to win. What did you give back that makes you feel entitled? And this is like something that I definitely didn't express it that well in the first like year or so of Hearthstone. And I definitely like made a lot of pro players pissed at me, but there's just this feeling of like entitlement where pro with air quotes, because sure, definition of professional is someone that makes a living doing it, which most of these pros did not. A lot of pro players early on felt like, first of all, they would make their little clique of other pro players and they would basically look down on streamers and content creators and be like, oh, we're better at these games. We deserve more exposure than them. And, you know, after like 3 years of not making money, eventually that was like beaten into their head that like, yeah, it's not how the world works. You have to like give something. But I would basically go in on these people because it's sad that they like behave in a condescending way towards people that are actually working harder than them. You know, like it's not hard to play a game of Hearthstone. It's hard as hell to make hundreds of fucking hours of YouTube content a month like Trolden does.
Well, I mean, I think we are seeing this kind of, you know, movement towards that, right? I mean, a lot of these people that are you know, a lot of people are streaming now, you know, all these players are trying to stream and, you know, trying to do some videos and some guides. You know, Mr. Agut, you're a good example of somebody who isn't part of a team, right? Like you're kind of operating independently, doing your own streams and doing, you know, whatever guides or whatever on Reddit too, you know, just with your, any new decks that you have. Why don't you talk about that? You know, just like, what is your strategy, I guess, with this? Or what is your views on being a successful player slash, you know, streamer or whatever in our space?
Well, right now I'm trying to make my stream bigger. To be honest, when I started streaming, I just did it because I wanted to get invited to tournaments.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense. Back then,
I didn't really care so much about the stream. I just cared to get into the tournaments. And you can only do that if you're like, a big streamer, if people know you, basically.
Because of the invitationals, right? Because people were wanting views from their events, so they'd only pick people that would generate views.
Dude, I can't even tell you how many times I got invited to tournaments and turned it down because people had no idea just how bad I was for this. Like, oh God,
We've all been there. I mean, it's maybe like Declan did the same thing too. So we've all done it. So you were streaming, but now how about now? How about now? What do you think of streaming?
Right now streaming is pretty fun. I'm still trying to get into tournaments, get some points from the regionals.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And hopefully I qualify this time.
Okay. So that line of thinking, like Ray, that line of thinking about like streaming just to get into tournaments, isn't that like backwards, right? I mean, I guess streaming be almost more important than trying to get into these tournaments, assuming that these tournament prize pools are just not huge, you know, like the value from winning isn't enough.
Well, most tournaments, the vast majority of money being given away has zero invites now. There's very few invite-only tournaments. You just hear about the invite-only tournaments because those are the ones people actually happen to watch. Tournaments are done completely through open qualification, including BlizzCon championships. And so you get with open qualification, a bunch of random people every time. And that's great for them. You know, they're making some money, they're involved, but you know, these people didn't do it because of streaming. But yeah, in the first 6 months of Hearthstone was maybe the most frustrated I'd been with the esports scene, because it wasn't even the biggest streamers that got invited. It was the most networked StarCraft pros in fucking Hearthstone tournaments. And this was a time period where I wanted to play professionally and I wanted a chance in every tournament. And I just wanted like notoriety. I wanted to prove to people how good I was. Because back then the skill gap was massively higher.
It was very high between
good and great. And I wouldn't get invited to any of this shit because I didn't play StarCraft at like a tier 3 level 2 years ago.
What pros? I'm trying to think.
Forsen?
Did you watch any
Forsen and Show, you mean? And,
no, there's a lot of them.
And Strifecrow. Strifecrow's good. Kiyuki and Monk. Where did you start, Chris?
No, I started at the very beginning, dude. I started at the very, very beginning.
You did. Yeah, yeah. But you started in StarCraft, I mean.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I started in
the transition. Rodan started in StarCraft.
Okay. So you're saying just generally just all the StarCraft personalities and players.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, but they didn't like... It's not like there weren't Hearthstone people that wanted to play these things. It's like fucking click of StarCraft, but you're not going to tell me otherwise. That was the first 6 months of professional Hearthstone play. And anyway, we moved beyond that to individual streamers blowing up. So like my stream blew up, Trump's blew up, Crips blew up. Amaz was like phase two. He was a bit later. But at that point, we were the guys getting a lot of invites, and it was mostly invite based because you'd have these third parties that want to throw a tournament.
Yep.
Sponsors want the most viewer numbers. People want to make the sponsors happy. They're the ones making the tournament happen. So to get the viewer numbers, you invite the big streamers. So that was like phase two. And that's what Yagi's describing, I think, is like that time period where if you're a player that doesn't have a big stream, but you're a very good player, and that skill gap was still pretty high back then between the players that sucked and were great, like really good. Mm-hmm. Then it's like frustrating because you're not getting invited because you're not a big streamer. So like at that point, it doesn't make sense. And nowadays, it doesn't matter if you're a streamer. It doesn't matter if you're really good at the game. Your odds of getting into these like most relevant tournaments are absolutely tiny. That's not true for all tournaments. There's still a lot of invite-only tournaments. Well, okay. And a lot of
what are relevant tournaments? You know, what I mean, like, are you talking about? I mean, HCT is definitely as open as possible, just to for you know, skill based or point based, whatever. So relevant meaning high money type of tournaments. Is that what you mean? Or
High money tournaments, tournaments that people watch. I mean, HCT is the only tournament series that has succeeded in breaking 50K viewers with mostly unknown players. Mm-hmm. Like the Blizzard event, you know, that's what Blizzard market
it's money the main storyline, so it better, right? Okay.
Yeah. So honestly, I think it's succeeded in that regard, but yeah, it's...
Okay.
I forgot what I was talking about.
Yeah, that's okay. So yeah, good. Do you feel like you're making more money from your stream or from, like, tournament winnings and playing in that?
I was not invited to turn any tournaments. Just like
not be invited to tournaments?
8, 9.
Okay.
Maybe a bit more. So definitely from streaming.
Okay. God, that just blows my mind you're not invited to tournaments. That
a lot
really
of it does
blows
come.
My mind. Because you're actually a decent number, I mean, like, viewership wise, you're not a small streamer at this point. So, I mean, you're mid-tier at the very least, right? I mean, you get 1,000, 2,000 people watching and on, like, normal days. So that kind of blows my mind, and especially the skill level at which you play the game, too. Okay, that's crazy.
I agree that's unfair. And honestly, one of the reasons is, like, the whole going solo thing. Most streamers get tournament invites. Most of the streamers that aren't, like, whale streamers at five-digit view counts, they get invites through, like, team networking, sort of. So a lot of the tournaments that happen, they'll be like, okay, well, we'll give 2 spots to this team and 3 spots to this team and 1 spot to this team.
Yeah.
And then the team kind of picks the
player they want to send. Yeah.
Mm, okay. Well, that's unfortunate.
That's another point, I guess, you could talk about, is, like, the value of a team to a player. Right? Like, because there's the whole, okay, as a team owner, you know, this whole business sucks. But as a player, is it worth joining a team knowing full well that the percentage of sponsorship you're getting from what they're getting is probably smaller than if you went freelance?
Yeah.
But on the flip side, if your intent is to compete, then of course you're getting possibly a bit less exposure if you're kind of in the mid tier, right? So it's just a little bit of you're kind of giving up. Portion of your independence by going for a team, but at the same time, if you really want to compete, maybe it's worth the advantages.
Well, that kind of
teams aren't. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
Sure.
I wouldn't say teams are this, like, they don't open this gate to tournaments. It's like very, very tournaments. Maybe once every 2 months there will be a tournament that has an invite structure like that. But yeah, it's not like teams are the only way to get into tournaments, and you have to sacrifice a lot as a player. I guarantee you, it is entirely the opposite way. The teams in every single case are the ones getting fucked over in the scenario. Because if the player goes solo, he doesn't have a sales team behind him. No matter what exposure you have, it's not like sponsors are just going to flock to you. If a sponsor wants to go to Hearthstone, he's going to go to, like, Crip, Trump, Rain Adam, Moz, Forsen first. They're not going to go to, like, smaller streamers. So most of the time, even smaller streamers or, like, pro players only get a very good deal because they're making actual money instead of no money. Helping them. Well, on top of that, they're getting exposure. So, like, you're actually getting paid, and most teams operate at a loss for that reason. It's just, there's a bunch of factors of that too. It's kind of like a land grab. Everyone wants to sign players, so the market rate kind of goes up to more than these players are bringing in. So it's a lot of that too.
Okay, well, yeah, again, that just surprises me. Like, event organizers, I would, you know, like, if you don't know anything about the space, event organizers, of course, are just going to go and talk to teams. And then you have this situation where teams kind of, you know, send whatever players, right? But if your event organizers know the space, they should know who's, you know, kind of on the rise or who are super popular. I mean, that's what's just
that's the ideal world. That's an ideal world you're describing right there. But
okay. That just blows my mind. But anyway, so we got Nidra on here. We fixed the audio issues. Nidra, I want to welcome you to the show. You here?
Hey guys, thank you. I'm hoping that I'm here.
Yes, am you are I here?
Yes.
You are here. Well, so thanks for coming on. Thanks for joining us. We definitely wanted
thanks for having me.
We want to talk about the article that you wrote yesterday, or the rebuttal that you wrote to Shavek's article. And you made up, you know, a few very strong statements in it, mostly, again, just rebutting what Shavek was implying in his article. One of them was really about, I guess, the, you know, we've talked a little bit about just the viability of being a player, and well, not just a player, but just being a no-name player, a player that does that only plays and just tries to become the best in Hearthstone and doesn't do any other content. And I think, you know, you were pretty much agreeing with everything that we've been saying, which was, you know, you got to do work, right? You can't just be good at the game and that's it. From a journalist standpoint, you know, writing about, you know, I know you've written articles about, you know, like a player having a big run in a big tournament or upsetting somebody in a tournament. What are your thoughts just generally on trying to get any kind of exposure, any kind of momentum going for any of these pieces that you write or any of the players that you write about?
I mean, it's a complex process breaking out as a player, right? Because if you want your story to be told, you have to make people care about you, right? When I talk about breaking out as a player and going back to the early days, I always give Tyson L as an example, right? Tyson. Because he was the first player I actually profiled. I think it was the first profile article actually written about a Hearthstone player. So what happened to Tyson is he won a couple of Zoda Cups, which were open tournaments. You know, back then it was the big thing to win a couple of those because there was nothing else. And then he got invited to the King of the Hill, which was held by iHeartU. He won 7 or 8 in a row, something like this, like an unbelievable record. So, you know, this makes a guy like me, a journalist, a writer, care. So, you know, I go there, I do my magic, I publish an article, I tell his story, but this did not get Thijs incredibly famous, right? It's not like people read this article like, oh my god, Thijs is the next big thing, because people were still caring about the well streamers, as Ryan likes to call them, right? You know, the Thijs did not get a fan base until much, much later. Like, he was on Meteor Makers then. Even though he won DreamHack by the end of the year, it was not until he was getting hyped as the best player in Europe 2015 that people started paying attention. And really, Thijs' success as a Hearthstone player, as a name, became a product of him becoming going on Kinguin, and then combined with Lothar's managerial, you know, fervor, et cetera, et cetera. It's a complex procedure. You need everything to fall into place. Basically, you have to be good. You have to have good management. You have to get a lot of invites, tournaments, which also comes, as Raina pointed out, through good management and through team network, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like being good and winning means jack shit. If it sounds unfair. I mean, I wrote it in the article basically with the same language. It really doesn't mean shit. Like, for example, I'll give you an example from not within esports. Like, if I look at my profession, like as a journalist, as a writer, writing something good doesn't make me a success story, right? Yeah. I have to go and put it on Reddit. I have to hope people like it. I have to promote it on Twitter, Facebook. I have to tell people about it, right? It's like 20% of the writing is the actual writing. 80% is them promoting and polishing and editing and marketing, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same for when you're a Hearthstone pro or pro in any other esport. I don't want to make comparisons to normal esports because, as you guys pointed out, it's completely different. It's like whoever puts a sign of equality between esports and sports for these things is a complete idiot. Like, Hearthstone isn't even equal to the other esports, right? And this is also something I brought up. The game functions in a completely different way. So I have to adapt to what the game demands, right? Again, it's not like pro gaming, as I put it, is not glorified playtime. You cannot just sit on your ass, play the game, win a couple of tournaments, and they're like, oh, where are my money? Well, your money are nowhere because you're not earning them, because this is what you need to do to earn these checks. And if you're not doing them, well, then you're going to be poor, and then you're going to be homeless. I mean, it's like not on a team.
Okay, I get the idea.
Yeah, definitely get. So let's talk about Thijs a little bit, because you this is like your very big example of somebody who's, you know, been good at the game, you know, historically been good at the game, and he is kind of, you know, had success, you know, with it. Mm-hmm. I do want to throw in something there that you didn't throw in, which was he started streaming at some point too.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah, of course,
you had thousands of people watching him stream during that time too.
Yeah.
How much of that actually had to do with Tice becoming more of a regular name? I mean, obviously the storyline of him winning consecutive, you know, events, even like three or four at the end of last season, like in a row, three in a row, I think, of the last season. It definitely helps with making these storylines for somebody like Tice. Yeah. But I just feel like streaming, it seems like a lot of this leads back to streaming. And
yeah, I mean, streaming and content creation, like he puts a ton of stuff on YouTube, like guides and, you know, just matches, like play some weird decks. So he gets his name through every possible channel, right? This is what you have to do. Like he's winning tournaments, streaming, making video content, getting invited to more tournaments, winning opens, et cetera, et cetera. Like he's exploring every single alley which can bring him profit. Like this is what a hardworking pro gamer has to do to earn his living, right? If you're not doing all of this or trying to do most of this, you do not deserve to earn a paycheck at the end of the day. It's hard, like
everything else.
But that's job, man. Like if I'm doing half-assed work, you know, my boss yells at me, I don't get paid, you know, I'm losing breathers, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So like I have to give my best and try explore all different alleys of profit to be able to pay my rent at the end of the month, right? So if you're not doing this, sorry, get out.
The one thing I want to mention there though is that the time when Tice started mattering, at the time his stream was still getting like two digits of viewers, like right. sub 100 most of the time. So the streaming like shows that he was doing everything important, which is great from his side, but the streaming isn't what made Tice take off, and it wasn't the fact that he won so many tournaments early on, which, as I mentioned earlier, that was a time when there's a bigger gap in skill level between the people that were good and not good. So you cannot replicate that in 2016. There's just too much information that's public. There's too many players at that level. You can't win 7 King of the Hills in a row against reasonable opponents. It's just not. Anymore.
Well, he did win 3 tournaments at the end of last year, which was pretty impressive.
Right. That was great. That was great. I'm not. Tice is one of the best players in the world for sure. What I'm going to say is the biggest reason that we know about him and can like talk about him, because I mean I knew about him for a long time. I made him an offer when he was on My Insanity, but that team wouldn't sell at the time the contract. Anyway, the reason he's known is Lothar. That was the biggest thing. Yeah. For those of you guys who don't know what Lothar does, Lothar basically brought together Tice, life coach, RDU, and I think, do they have Sifka now? I think they do.
No,
yeah, they don't. I think they were looking at it, but I don't know if it actually got the...
No, Sifka doesn't want to stream, so they will never get it.
Right.
That was one of the big problems.
So why does that matter? Like, why is this guy that casts some tournaments the best, the reason that I know Tice exists? And the reason is, Lothar is super fucking good at networking. He's a really socially adjusted guy, very likable, and he's at all of these events for one reason or another, just networking with people. So every time a tournament happens, Lothar knows the organizer. The organizer knows Lothar, and when they're looking for people to fill out their Hearthstone tournament, they're going to consult him. He's one of the people they're going to consult.
Right.
And they're going to consult Frodan too. They'll consult me sometimes. And then Lothar says, well, hey, this G2 roster is pretty fucking good. These players are, you know, legendary, not as legendary as Tempestorm, but legendary nonetheless. And I'll fucking, you know, invite them. And that's how they get into all these tournaments, and it snowballs. So having like proper management that's just at these events, like befriending organizers, is the way to do it. And it might sound like an outwardly unfair system because like, oh, then how can the no-name players get in? But it's like, their skill level is super, super similar to the level of like these unknown pros, and they just have a bigger following, and they've gone through all the work to get on a team. It's not like teams sign no-name players. You have to work hard to even get on a team in the first place. And at that point, it pays off in tournament invites. So that's what I want to say there. But yeah, as for the Nidra article, there is one part that really, really fucking upset me. As long as I liked most of the article and most of it made sense. Mm-hmm. This is like something that people didn't realize for over 2 years. But what it failed to acknowledge is that websites and just things like Gosu gamers in general are the biggest cause for so many people within the community claiming that Hearthstone is an RNG game. So what I mean by that is you have all these tournaments that have like a lot of invites. And then as soon as you have an open qualifier and there's thousands of people, obviously all these pros aren't just going to be the top eight. Hearthstone's too random for that. But publications like Gosu Gamers and people in the community that are like, in their mind, fighting for little guy, they start claiming like, oh, look, as long as it's not an invite system, all these fucking no-name players did better. Yeah, these pros don't deserve to be there. These no-name players are better. And that's just not fucking true. The skill level is similar. And Hearthstone is very random when you have that many participants of a similar skill level. So then what guys like me or other streamers or existing pro players have to do, like, why did we lose? Is this random player that came out of nowhere and happened to win this tournament, is he better than us? No, he really isn't, almost ever. And you have to say, like, you know, Hearthstone's a random game. That's why I lost. So that's why we outwardly explain it like that. And that's the honest truth, because the next tournament is not like this no-name player wins again. It has never fucking happened. Aside from like the Taj thing, but you know what I mean? The point is that's the problem, right? Is people, every time a no-name player wins an open qualifier tournament, people in the community are like, this is why the pros don't deserve to be there. And then even though that player will be forgotten about in a week and never wins anything again, we have to make the defensive argument of Hearthstone's an RNG game, and then people respect the esport less.
Sure, but you have to understand, like, as publications, we have to follow the storylines. Like, we have to craft the storylines. When somebody unknown to the community wins a tournament, we have to make it sound like an upset. We cannot just, like, write an article that's like, oh, well, everybody could have won it. It doesn't really matter, because then nobody would fucking read us. And then about the RNG, that's, I know why you guys are making these statements, and I agree, because, I mean, this is the nature of the game. Literally, everybody can win, and I play the game a lot, so I'm familiar with how it works. But again, it's also not helping for the game to be accepted as something serious, right? Because when you create a culture and proliferate a culture of just dismissing a game because, well, it's RNG, it's luck, it kind of hurts, you know, the integrity of the game, and people start taking it less serious. This is a point that the Wrath made on Twitter and has made it a couple of times in the past. Right. And I do stand behind him. Like, I know this is the truth. I know that people lose to RNG to like juggles and to whatever you can think of. But it's like, if it's stop, or at least, you know, take it a bit, down a notch to, you know, talking about RNG, people might start talking it a bit more seriously. I actually think it's a bit like beyond repair at this point, but because it's like 3 years too late.
Okay, so it's beyond repair. I mean, we are selling this whole thing, and Blizzard, including Blizzard, to the highest degree, we're selling this thing as a competitive game, right?
Sure.
And so yes, there has to be some element of talking about people being better than another person, and it just not, you know, randomly happening, even in poker to some degree, right? Like poker, it's accepted that there's obviously, I don't want to say randomness, but there's, you know, it's a probability percentage type of thing, right?
I'm going to stop you just really quickly, because what we have to do maybe as a community is, or at least as commentators or whatever it is, people who cover that kind of stuff, is acknowledge that if they were to make, you know, another best of five happen afterwards, assuming that you really believe that they're on equal skill level, then make sure that you don't mention too much of the variance, because if you just report results, then that's fine. You can create the narrative of the match. But overall, it's not about, you know, yes, he got top deck by Rock Battle Weapon on Doomhammer. You know, that, yes, that's what we saw. But effectively, if they were to replay that matchup like 100 times, would it be close to 50-50 or not? Because I think we only see a small portion of matches and games between two players, right? So whenever that's broadcast, we see the luck. Like, we have the story, the short-term narrative, and we hold on to that. Like, we fixate on that stuff without really acknowledging the bigger picture. And I think maybe that's a bit more difficult to...
But then, like...
Writers. Like, how do you cover this while having it be exciting?
There's like a checkmate situation when it comes to... to storytelling in Hearthstone, right? Because Hearthstone only makes sense when you look at large amounts of data, right? Mm-hmm. This is the only way you can narrate Hearthstone adequately. Because I'm going to use Ghost Ranking as an example, not because they're good or because they're flawless, but because they only get better when we add more data. Ghost Ranking, see, their first year was the biggest garbage produced in the Hearthstone community. I'm saying this as the person who produced it, right? So, the rankings get better and better. Again, they will never be flawless, but they get better when we add more tournaments, more data. When we get more admins so they can add more tournaments, et cetera. So only then you can start making sense of Hearthstone, like, oh, who are the better players, like, overall. But you can never, say, oh, this guy is definitively better than the other. Like you can make statements in StarCraft 2 and CS:GO. So when it comes to storytelling of matches, like, you're extremely limited because these two guys will play, let's say, 5 games, which is extremely small amounts of data. So you cannot truly say, oh, this guy would have won, over the other guy if they played 150 games, right? Because this is never going to happen in an actual tournament. So you have to be limited. You have to limit your storytelling to this 5 game series, which by nature will be skewed and flawed, etc. But we have to make the best of it, right? So it's, storytelling, it's a big mess in Hearthstone. It's imperfect and it's flawed, but you have to understand why it is and you have to go along with it. Because the guys that are making the stories, they're doing their best because they're working with a flawed game.
So, right. Go ahead, Noxious. Sorry, I didn't win.
No, I mean, I don't have much to add. It's always the same problem when it comes to variance and whatnot. Like, when you look even at a poker tournament, I think the advantage that poker has over Hearthstone is I can fold the hand and just go to the next one. So, like, the amount of times that you can just turn down a decision that's bad for you in poker is, like, about 100,000 times bigger than in Hearthstone. Like, I can't just choose to surrender this starting hand and start a new game again. Like, there's no such thing in Hearthstone. I have to play it out. It'll take 15 minutes. I want to throw a hand in poker. It can be rather quick, especially if it's online. So, like, I'll just on that basis alone, the storytelling of Hearthstone is super skewed towards just having that luck kind of pop out even more. And that's really difficult to convey. And, like, I'm not accusing anyone of badly portraying the RNG that happens and whatnot. It's just the fact that I think we should emphasize more, maybe have more 1v1s, best of 50s over a few days between players. I don't know if people would be up for that, but that would be a cool kind of format to have. It's like this kind of league where you have two players who play a ton of best of fives against one another, and that gives you enough data to make the call at the end of the day, as opposed to having let's do a best of 7 here with a loser's bracket where they claim back up. Like, I don't know what we have to change to the whole tournament system to make it seem less about the immediate top decked Rogbiter weapon on Doomhammer and more about how well the player played an entire series of matches.
What do you think about it, Yagi? I feel like we've been talking over you a lot. What do you think about the people's perception of Hearthstone being very random on a competitive level? Issues, man.
Yeah, he's got some serious Discord issues. Hold on, let me get him to.
I should be using Curse, man.
Curse voice, the dream.
To the left of Raynad there on his window.
We'll get to you when you figure it out, man. My main issue, I guess, is. Going back to this, the Goose Gamers thing, right? When Hearthstone first started, there was a massive skill gap between the people that knew how to play the game and the people that didn't. And then a lot of things came since then, including Conquest, including just hundreds of other players that hit that low skill ceiling of competitive Hearthstone play. And it's actually a pretty high skill ceiling, but it's nowhere near the skill ceiling of Smash Melee or Counter-Strike or StarCraft. It's just easier to get to a pro level of play in Hearthstone compared to other games, by a big margin. Mm-hmm. But anyway, there's basically more players that can compete at that level, so there isn't this massive gap between players like Tyze and Kalento and everyone else. So as that started to happen, basically in the early days of Hearthstone, because the better players won more often, you could build this narrative where if a player lost a tournament, it's not necessarily just randomness. Maybe he usually picked bad decks or whatever. So the writing about Hearthstone in the early days was it basically like when there was an upset, it was a big deal. Like the, right. the player usually was better, or like for that tournament was better. It's just that as Hearthstone started to shift away from that, and it became kind of the results became more random, basically, because there were more people that were competitive at that level. Publications, and not just Gosu gamers, but a lot of publications and people talking about the game, they would basically start to discredit the pros that had been at the game up till that point, and they start criticizing the invite system, which again isn't perfect, but they start criticizing it and feel like they speak as though there are these incredible world-class players that are just completely untapped and just can't get this breakout performance because they can't get invited. And I mean, in some cases that's accurate because there are a lot of players that play at that level, but it's also like there are no players that are just astronomically better than the existing pros we have that are just being kept down. That's just not the right narrative. So it's frustrating when you see shit like, trying to think of like some specific articles, but like the team rankings thing, right? It's like,
right. Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, how can you, that's just like frustrating to read as an owner for so many reasons, not the least of which is that most teams don't even practice together. Every individual Easily. Player has their own group of friends that they practice with. So it's right.
I think maybe the issue here is, I'm going to bring up poker again. And of course, poker is a little different because it's not 1v1 necessarily until the very end. But I feel like they've done a good job of having a game that has a lot of, you know, luck element to it. You know, just whenever it's the right time, you know, and things work out the way they should or shouldn't. You know, it happens all the time in poker. And, you know, Noxious, you brought up a good point that there's a lot of hands potentially. Like, I think in Hearthstone, whenever something bad happens to you, it's really bad. Like, it usually impacts the match in a much bigger way than, say, poker, like on your very last hand, like you're going all in or something like that. But I think the narrative for poker has always been really good. Like, the commentators, they have a structure where it's, you know, your greatness in poker is measured upon bracelets. So like this individual event, it's not like upsets, you know, like who gets upset, like if Phil Ivey doesn't make it to the end or whoever, you know, it's not an upset. It's just kind of part of the game. You know, they accept that. And I feel like with Hearthstone, we should go more in that direction from the structure standpoint, like competitive structure, as well as even from a narrative, you know, structure, standpoint from journalists and casters and everything. It's just like, just be happy about like what's going on right now. Like, don't talk about like, you know, like somebody upsetting another person. Just talk about what good fortune it is for this dude, you know, and if he wins a tournament, then, you know, awesome. And just see what happens for him, you know, type of thing. Kind of like what you did with Tice, you know, Nigel, you know, you talked about just his successes, mm-hmm. you know, this is a series of successes instead of like, oh, so-and-so upset Raynad at a, you know, an event, you know, that's not necessary. And it doesn't make sense because
I don't see it as a negative storytelling basically. Right. I see it more as a positive storytelling. Like obviously the guy who got upset, who got beaten by no name will feel shitty because he just lost to nobody. But, you know, in other games, like an upsets are a major part of storytelling, right? When some low-level team or low-level...
The problem isn't that you're saying, hey, this guy beat this guy. That's just reporting what happened, which is good. You should do that.
Yeah. Sure.
The problem is, like, you report that result and you're like, this is why this guy doesn't deserve to be invited to shit. This is why we need like.
Do we do like? I don't remember writing.
No. I'm not saying your articles specifically say that. But I'm saying like the overall narrative is like this is why we need more open tournaments so guys like this win more. And it's like, I mean, it does. I don't know. I do agree. We need more open tournaments. We need like a.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It needs to be more of like a. An overall like structure shift, and I am actively building something to fix it, but it's like I don't know. I guess like the narrative should be more like Chris described. I actually like that a lot.
Just like kind of the WSOP it's a thing. Historical thing, and you mentioned Gosu rankings too, Nydra. Like, you know, you guys need something to point at, saying like this guy's, you know, having the best season out of everybody. You know, there needs to be something that's collective that's not just HCT points, you know, and things like.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
I mean, just ranking, right? Of course.
Yeah.
It's again, I'm not advertising Gosu rankings anywhere actively almost anymore. Like whenever, you know, a streamer, like a caster brings it up on during tournament stream, that's entirely on their own accord. I don't go to Raven or sort of like, guys, plug Ghost Rankings because
of this shit.
No, it's one system that tries, you know, its best to put competitive Hearthstone into numbers, right? Because everything else is subjective. Even Ghost Rankings are subjective because they work on based on algorithm that some guy coded and then which some other guy adjusted with some numbers, right?
It's definitely gotten more sophisticated as, you know, like in the last two and a half years for sure. I mean, I can't say I look at it all the time, and that, you know, that's an issue too, because we just don't have, I don't think it's necessarily universally accepted, even though I think event organizers do use it.
It shouldn't be universally accepted, right? It's no ranking will be universally accepted if we go there, unless, like, until Blizzard go and certify one ranking and, like, this is what we measure Hearthstone by. Like, this is now the official ranking. And even that ladder will not system. Be universally accepted. Yeah, the ladder system.
My son.
Like, ladder system is a beast that I want removed from competitive Hearthstone altogether, but I know I will be met with vicious resistance because I'm in the minority.
I agree with that.
You're good. Are you... say something real quick. Are you there?
Is it working?
Okay, it's working. Gosh, yes. There's something crazy going on with you. So what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on all of this stuff?
What I would like to see right now for tournaments is more deck building tournaments. I think a lot of people in the pro Hearthstone scene don't know how to build decks, like good decks, and I would like to see that a bit more. A lot of the pro players don't know how to build decks, and I feel like you would find the better players then.
Yeah, maybe that would be nice, though, to have, like, different tournaments for different types of players, right? Because if you got, like, the pilots who excel at just... Like, Kalento, for instance, like, he'll build decks pretty well, but you'll find that very often he picks up a shell that he... At least a long time ago, he would pick a deck that worked, that somebody built, and he would improve and refine it and pilot it to near perfection for a long time. That's kind of what we saw coming from him. And... it would be nice to have, like, a tournament where deck building is emphasized. Like, we've already had some of them. Like, the whole drafting thing that happened. We also had the restrictions and Challenge Stone, for instance. Like, there's been a lot. But we don't have enough for those types of players who are just excellent at doing so, I think. Maybe that's one skill that we should recognize, like a facet of a player we should recognize more.
Yeah. I mean, I think overall, we've talked about it. Deck building is, a part that of Hearthstone skill that's completely undervalued right now because of just you know sharing decks and things like Hearthpwn that where people just literally post their decks every single hour and, you know, say whatever deck got to legend, and everything is just so public like that. I don't think it's valued enough. I think being a great deck builder is a huge part. Like, if you did have more of these, you know, sealed tournaments and things like that, you wouldn't see just this whole cluster like we've been talking about of players in the same, you know, skill level. You'd see some, at least maybe more of a separation with, I don't know, 50% of the players. I don't know what the percentage actually is. But you would see more, you know, cream rise to the top a little bit. And maybe, actually, you might see some deck builders actually just kind of get into the mix because they're just much better at it than playing the decks.
There's a
separate issue, but that's like a whole
thing. A lot of shifts we can do with tournament formats, and like maybe the percentages of what kind of players change goes like the right way. But the point is, those are like very long-term solutions. I think like in the short term, the way we fix all of this shit and just get things back on track is the casters, honestly. I think they have more sway than anybody. So like most people, first of all, don't follow competitive Hearthstone religiously, but when they think like, okay, who's the best Hearthstone player in the world? They're going to think of a name like Kalento. And the reason they're going to think of a name like Kalento, even though he literally just had like, I think he's a top 10 player in the world, but he did only have like that 1 3-month streak, which was an insane streak of winning tournaments, to be fair. But like, you know, it's like this one meta game where you have a lot of good results. And then you have like a year and a half of like, below average results like everyone else, and it's like still considered the best player in the world, and it's like, why is that? Why does he, you know, his viewership, it's not from, because like, he gets insane stream numbers too, and it's not just from like people it's not like Colento's memeing or whatever. Like,
he's definitely not doing
it. It's not like he has a big YouTube channel. It's not where the numbers are coming from. He's just respected as a player. Mm-hmm. So despite having like not great results for a long, long time, why is he still considered a great player like that? And the answer is just the narratives that casters build. Like Frodan and all the other casters built up that storyline so aggressively of Colento being one of these best players. And he was winning these tournaments as they were, you know, that was the storyline. Like, this is the guy to beat. And that sticks to this day. And Ties, again, same thing. Like, they build that storyline. And they do what they can to build a storyline behind every single player at HCT and stuff. But I guess they, when somebody does have a really good year, they should probably be pushing that more. Like, Super JJ right now, I think, is having a really good
stretch right now.
Yeah. So, like, he should be getting that kind of promotion more than he has been. They should do that for a lot of players. Like, I don't know. That's just how I feel about it. I think a lot of it's just on the casters and the narratives that people hear, because that's the most forward-facing part of Hearthstone esports.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so going back to the whole Splice article that actually mentioned the whole building narrative, like, I don't agree with every single point that's made on the article, and I don't think it's solely on the casters to push that narrative, but based on what we've discussed, it's essentially down to, like, giving the first push to give the player that exposure, and then if he wants to seize it, then it's up to him to make that stream happen, to make the content, and if he doesn't, then that's also on him, but it's down initially for the initial, like, the drive, I guess, at first. That would be on the caster side.
Okay, so I want to, I guess, maybe flip the... see what your thoughts are on just how much of a responsibility is to the community too, because, you know, from one standpoint you can say, well, it's our job to like figure out what they want and give them what they want, but Niger, you mentioned in your article that, you know, one of the things that he should have brought up, or why didn't he bring up, you know, Reddit downvoting, just any of our articles that we write on these up and coming players too?
Yeah, it's really, you know, a problem. Like, a lot of people pointed out it's not happening to all articles, and this is certainly true, but, you know, when Chavin says that storytelling is failing, a part of the problem is that not always people want to read about, you know, the actual storytelling, right? I mentioned an article I wrote for PC Gamer about the six up-and-coming players to watch for in 2015 or 2016. I can't even remember this, like, what year it was. And we were talking about AK Wonder, Super JJ, all of these names that have, like, now incidentally become super good and, you know, winning tournaments as if, you know, journalists know what they're talking about. But, you know, this was downvoted to hell. Now you can make excuses. Oh, but the PC Gamer article was a gallery article and people hate this. Well, but it's still good content, right? It still talks about these no-name players that are struggling, but they're super talented and they deserve, you know, attention. So, like, the content is there. Like, if you want to raise awareness, go give it an upvote, and more people will read about Super JJ and AK and VLPS. I think was in there.
And Yagook was in there, dude. Yagook was in there. He published his deck list of Hunter with, like, I don't remember what the exact list was, but nobody expected it to come out.
It was from the European 2014 Europe Championship, I believe, at DreamHack. Yeah. But anyways, yeah. So, you know, there is storytelling there about everything, right? And the community is responsible a lot, and they don't realize it, but they should, because Reddit is probably the biggest, you know, influencer of who cares about whom, right? It's the number one place for Hearthstone that people go, and they don't realize possibly their power, right? It's almost ironic, because every time they chase somebody out of the scene, they give themselves a pat on the back, like, yeah, guys, we destroyed another career, like, yep, we have influence, but help, you know, a budding career. Now, fuck that. Like, it's way more fun destroying people, right? So, and it's like, I don't mean to shit on Reddit, because not everybody on Reddit is a piece of shit, obviously. And there are a lot of, you know, quality people that are just sitting there and reading and upvoting, you know, what they like. And they don't, you know, go and witch hunt people out of the scene. But there are certainly a lot of people who do that, and unfortunately, they kind of have a big of influence.
But you're insinuating those people downvote your articles.
No, I'm not insinuating anything. I'm just making observations. Now, I don't care who downvotes my right? I'm not paid by clicks. I'm not paid by words or anything like this, right? I don't care who reads my articles. That's the truth. Like, obviously, it's good if they read it, if more people read it, but it doesn't really make or break my day, right? So, but when you talk about helping people make expand their profile and expand their exposure, Reddit and the entire community can give a huge helping hand. Like, go talk about this guy if you find him awesome. Like, if you like VLPS, what he played in China versus NA, for example, like a year ago, go tell people, like, this guy is awesome because this and that. Like, make a self-post. You don't really have to be a journalist to promote somebody.
True.
Like, everybody has a keyboard. Or self-post. Like, everybody has a keyboard and internet, so go do that. Tell other people how this guy is awesome, because we are not omniscient or omnipotent. We cannot write about every single player that's good. Like, I don't watch streams at all, if you want to believe it. So I don't know who plays awesome stuff on their private Twitch channel. So I only care about competitive Hearthstone, and so I'm limited in this way. Everybody has the power to promote somebody. It's cheap. It's actually free, if you want to believe it. So go, put your influence that you have as being a Redditor to good use for once, right? So, of course, like,
so be positive, basically, about stuff instead of just looking for stuff to downvote.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's fun to downvote something because, you're helping kill something. And, killing something is so much more fun, right? This is what everything is based on in gaming, right? Let's destroy something. But so sometimes, promoting good stuff can actually benefit somebody.
Yeah, agreed. And again, if you keep keeping things like that down, then we just see less of it, right? Like, you say that you don't care about people who like read your articles, Niger, but that's not true. You care about that a lot of people read your articles. Come on. All do. As content makers, we all care if people like watch our stuff.
What I mean is that my day is not made or broken based on who reads my article, right? I still get my salary and I still will write more articles. I'm not saying go vote stuff because this will bring me a salary increase. Or something.
Let's move on to the next fucking thing. Yeah. It's been an hour and a half. I need to.
Yeah, exactly. All right, buddy. Well, thanks for joining us on the show, and it was definitely a good discussion.
Before I go, I just want to say shout out to Toes the Badger, who actually helped me co-write the article. Like, a lot of the stuff in there is hers. And I think shout out should go to Shevik because he's the one who started the whole debate. Even though I do not agree with anything he wrote, except like one or two things, like small things that he didn't really expand on.
I think he had a few very good points, but it's just the overall tone seemed put a bit too much onus on.
But it's good that he sat and wrote this because it was started the whole debate, and the debate was needed.
Yeah, exactly. All right, buddy, take care.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
All right, guys. Well, we definitely spent a lot more time on that than I expected, but let's talk a little bit about let's just talk some rogue decks, and then we'll call it a day. How about that? Let's bring up some decks here. Okay, so we were going to do an analysis on just the rogue class, but
Archon is so fucking lucky, man.
Archon? What?
Oh, we skipped them.
Archon.
No, we shouldn't.
Okay, so here's the deal with Archon.
Oh, come on, man. Might as well go full retard. We started on this topic. Might as well close it off, right?
All right. Okay. We might have to shoot, man. We might have to be good on again just for the rogue discussion, because this is going on definitely a lot longer than I expected. Okay, so let's talk about Archon. Shoot. All right, so there was news with Archon, with Orange leaving, and the Backspace was supposed to be come on too, just to talk with us, but unfortunately he had to cancel like today, and we were thinking about maybe even doing next week. But so with Orange leaving Archon, there's all been this speculation. There's been rumors. I mean, I've heard rumors from just different sources, even for weeks, months now, that Archon's moving away from esports, given that they dropped their Dota 2 team, and now you see Orange, who's been doing quite well this year, to be honest, just in a lot of events, and him being a good player, obviously leaving the team too, that people are presuming that Archon's going more towards streamers and content makers versus competitive esports. So I can tell you just with the discussion with Backspace, he says that's not true. They're keeping their Hearthstone esports. Yeah, they're keeping their esports or Hearthstone team. They're just consolidating down to that. And, you know, Amnesiac and Zlay and Moz obviously are still going to be competing with that. So that's not true. I mean, it seems to be going around everywhere that's the case. So just to clear that up, that's definitely not true. Now, Orange leaving, that's... You know, that's losing another big player. They had, you know, Firebat left not too long ago too, and Orange has been, I don't know, I think he's been a pretty good face or image for the team too. Like, he's a really nice guy. I mean, does well. He seems to always say the right things too. He streams too. But I don't know. What are your thoughts, just generally, on the news? Noxious, I'll start with you.
I mean, I don't really have much of an opinion on it. It's just overall kind of tying back to the topic of. You know, the relevance of having a team when it comes to Hearthstone. That's as far as I think the discussion is kind of going around. Now, there might be more. We've seen Firebat also leave, or however that happened. I still don't know the exact reasons why all that stuff happened. But, in the wake of that, is it really tied to the whole... esports portion of the whole, the rumors that are going around. Like, it might just be something completely different where it has absolutely nothing to do with the different direction for Archon. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it was diverging interests.
The discussion really generated, I think, because they picked up Mira and they picked up Valkyrie, right?
Sure.
And, you know, those are
which is a lot of streaming, but every single team has to do that, right? Content creators, like Reyna says that a billion times, is content creators are worth more than players who necessarily will just play and not stream. At all. They don't have to, you know, write articles or do YouTube content, whatever that the case may be. All they have to do is be more than just players. If we need them for something beyond that, then I need them to be available. And I think that's something that Orange was willing to do. So there's something there that's probably not tied to just the advertising portion of it or the content creation.
Yeah, Backspace is up front. I mean, Orange just got a better offer. You know, he just, you know, went with the better offer, or they even told him they should go and take that offer because it's really good. So that's
none of those things are true.
Okay,
none of those things. Okay,
I'm just telling you what Backspace
is doing. Okay, do it.
Backspace has clearly shown that he is.
Oh boy, here we go.
Far and away the most completely and utterly idiotic person in esports when it comes to PR, and I have a hard time finding a better example. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But what he should have done is embraced the rumors that they're moving away to, moving away from the whole esports side and more into streamings. I think that would have been a brilliant way to do it. They should have embraced that and just been like, yes, we're focusing more on streamers. The Dota team I wasn't following. I don't think they were doing great. So they're probably just more expensive than the money they were bringing in. That's why they dropped them. Archon left for other reasons that I'm not going to say because it's not my business to dredge it up.
Sure.
And it's more about I want to go into why Archon exists. That's the big thing. Moz had a huge brand, still has a huge brand, because he did so many things right as far as blowing up a personal stream and a YouTube. He targeted a way younger demographic, kept it PG. His numbers blew up because Hearthstone is such a young user base. Like, you want to be PewDiePie for this game if you're a guy making videos online. Right. And eventually the size of his own personal brand grew so big to the point where the individual sponsors coming to him outpaced what a team could provide for him. Because, you know, a lot of these sponsorship deals for streamers that have over 10,000 viewers, these are for like five digits a month type of things that most teams can't afford to even pay. So in the case of like guys like Crypt that are associated with a team, it's mostly just a name. They're still getting their own sponsors and stuff. It's not the normal model of hey, these people are getting paid a salary and then they're promoting the sponsors the team tells them to. It's not. The deal for brands of that size. So after Amaz's stint with Liquid ended, he correctly decided to build his own brand. And this is something he wanted to do for the entire end of his contract with Liquid. He was correct in wanting to build his own business in the space. The problem is, and I touched on this earlier when we had the Hearthlytics guy on, is just like everybody else that wants to do a business in esports, he's like, hey, well, what kind of business do I want to do? What examples were there at the time in Hearthstone of streamers doing businesses? What example was there? It was literally nothing except TempoStorm. Except TempoStorm at all in the space.
Yeah.
So it's like the most clear model is like, hey, Raynad's doing this. He seems to be having success with it. I'm going to do the same thing and I'm going to do it better. That's the thought process he has. Now, a million PR disasters later, bad decisions, mismanagement, whatever other fucking can of worms are happening behind the scenes. Like the amount of shit I wish I could say publicly, but it's just so stupid to say. Point is, it's not going great. Yeah. So a bunch of players leave for various reasons. A bunch of players that they make offers to are unwilling to sign because of reputation and all those kinds of things. And it's like eventually we're at the point we're at now where you have to wonder why they did an esports team in the first place, where if they just go back to that time when Amaz has this huge brand, he's just out of his contract with Liquid, he wants to build a business in Hearthstone the way, like rightfully so, he should have just done a fucking production company, he should have done a consulting agency for esports, he could have done a talent agency, he could have done just like a fucking merch company, it didn't matter, just pure tournament hosting. He could have done a website. He could have done literally any kind of business he wanted. But instead, all he did was try to sign a bunch of people in Hearthstone that are already under contract with other teams and sign whatever he could and then make a website, God knows why, because TempoStorm happens to have one, and then neglect it for a year and a half. And we're just at this point where it's like, you can't just like go into a space and then like just like copy a business model. Sometimes you can, but the thing is, what I'm saying is, like I mentioned earlier, you don't want to be a team owner. It's a really shitty job in esports. You know what I mean? He should have baked his brand. He should have made a different type of the comparison I always use is like, you know, if I'm George Foreman and Tempo Storm's my grill, I'm trying to like, you know, promote the George Foreman grill type of thing so it can stand on its own legs and it's his bigger brand. Or like Dre and Beats by Dre. You know, he makes more off beats than he ever made off music. Yeah. That kind of shit. So team ownership is a very bad grill. Very, very, like, just like a horrible fucking choice. But he has no way of knowing that going into it, right? Like, I get why he tried to replicate the TempoStorm thing, because what else could you do? You know, that would require creativity. So
you think they should have gone just straight into
literally any other brand.
A billion other streamer things.
How do you even make money off a streamer team? No.
You'd have to be an agency for them, basically.
An agency. That's what I mean. Yeah,
sure. Yeah, agency would be fine. Like, but yeah, you can't, like, it's just that people just are so fucking ignorant and inexperienced in the space that they keep thinking, like, okay, I'm going to get teenagers to sign contracts with me and I'm going to pay them some money. And then they're going to get all these fans and then I'm going to sell sponsorship deals and I'm going to make a big business out of that. No, it's not like it's such a linear way of looking at it. It's not really how the model works in half the games in esports right now. It's just not the way the business actually operates on a ground level. So that's all I'm going to say. Archon had a lot of potential to do great stuff. They just should have been anything but an esports team. And I think at a certain point they'll move away from that. I thought a year ago they would just move to only production, but
yeah, with the ATLC and stuff like that.
Yeah, they should have branched out on what works more. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's just talk decks for really quick here. I just want to go through at least, you know, four or five of these decks because we got to talk about something about the game today that's actually specifically, especially when we have Mr. Good on here. So let's talk about some rogue decks and particularly, I guess, just powerful decks. And they have a lot to do with it being Miracle. So let me bring up all the Miracle decks that we have, the different variations of it.
It seems like Miracle is pretty much the standard rogue list nowadays. You know, it's kind of like the new oil that we had for forever during the GVG era.
Yeah, and I guess let's start off the conversation with just Miracle. Why is this archetype always like from the history of Hearthstone? Why is this consistently powerful? You're good.
Well,
you're good. Why don't you start?
No way, he's muted again.
Oh, come on, man. What's wrong with Mike?
I don't. Yeah, exactly.
Is it Discord? How are we fixing it?
Yeah, I've been having him reconnect the whole time. Noxious, why don't you start then?
Well, they have a few spells and they've got Gadget and Auctioneer. So, I mean, it's kind of boring to put it like that, but as long as all those cards are in basic set, like Prep, Backstab, Deadly, Eviscerate, Deadly Poison isn't even necessary. With Blade Flurry gone, you don't even want to play it nowadays. Conceal, Cold Blood, like Shadow Step. Cheap spells, Gadgets and Auctioneer, card draw, and removal is pretty much all you need.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep, can hear you now.
Yeah, it's basically that you can get a lot of tempo out of Rogue, like with the bags preparation. Mm-hmm. You can make a big Edfin nowadays and they cannot deal with it. Get into card advantage really fast mm-hmm. with Gadgets and Azure Drake.
Yeah, so a combination of those two things.
And you also have a lot of burst with... Yeah, with Maligos or Leroy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, why don't we talk about the first deck that's here to the left. This is like your most standard Miracle build. It's got the Cold Blood, it's got the Leroy for the combo at the end. Things to maybe talk about, I guess, Zeril. You know, we definitely talked about Zeril possibly being a great card for Miracle, given that you get two extra cheap spells. And... yeah, talk about, I guess, this variation of it, maybe the one or two card differences compared to what we've always known as just Miracle Rogue. Reyna?
I actually don't like Xeril too much because you lose too much tempo out of it when you play it. Mm-hmm. Like, it has really bad stats, right? It doesn't do so much on the board. And the current meta, to be honest, is just about board control. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really... yeah, it's just about spot control and tempo right now.
Yeah, so you see Violet Teacher used there a lot more often. I've seen it. I'd say nowadays cutting Zeril for Violet Teacher just seems to make more sense.
Yeah.
But like in a standard Miracle Rogue, this is kind of a shell to go off of, and then you probably want to branch out on in whatever direction you want. That's kind of what I like about Miracle Rogue as well, is there are quite a few flex spots that you can tweak. Whether you want to go the crazy double Shadow Step Leroy or simply cut out Shadow Steps is something you can do and simply keep it as a burst finisher. There's like a lot of ways to build the deck and have kind of a different mid-game to late-game.
Yeah. Ray?
Like Zeril's not a bad card, but I don't play it in most of my Miracle decks. It's just not very... like Yagi said, it's more about like getting... initiative on the board. That's how you win most of your games. So I'd rather play like Violet Teacher or something. It's not, usually I don't even play a third four drop. I like Miracle. I don't know. It's such a powerful deck. Like, it's so weak to Doomhammer, but it's so good against every like control strategy, and it has a lot of play to it. Once you know how to mulligan, you just feel like you have more control over your games than you do when you play other decks. Mm-hmm. It's definitely very fun to play. It has comeback mechanics, it has broken draws, it just does a lot of degenerate, uninteractive stuff. So, some things about the list that I don't understand. Everyone does it, but I don't know why. Everyone plays Leroy, for example. Mm-hmm. I guess you just want more burst to end the game after you draw a bunch of cards, but I'm not like the biggest fan. I guess it's good in the mirror. I don't know. I like things like Assassin's Blade a lot of the time.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm not the Rogue expert here. Yeah, you could tell me more about, like, why Leroy's played.
I feel like Assassin's Blade wouldn't make so much sense with Blade Free gone, and you would be forced to run two Deadly Poisons as well. And I feel like a lot of people right now in this meta are running Harrison. Mm-hmm. Like, there are a lot of warriors... A lot of shamans that even run Harrison. I wouldn't put Assassin's Blade in. Leroy is kind of nice to get mod burst damage in. Mm. So 6 damage is sometimes crucial.
Mm-hmm. So if the metagame is more about board control, why? Again, I'm not arguing or anything. I'm just curious. If the metagame is more about board control, why aren't more people playing like double Violet Teacher or something like that? Or like a good 3 drop?
With gadgets and with this kind of gadgets and deck, you don't want to have too many minions. If you put too many minions in, you will mostly not have a good gadgets in turn. That's why you don't play like double Violet Teacher.
That makes sense. Okay. And then all these lists play exactly one Deadly Poison. It's really good against like Tempo Warrior, but is it just kind of like a filler card so you have another one mana spell?
Mm-hmm. Deadly Poison is pretty good with your three drops with Edwin, SS7. Mm-hmm. It's a good combo card, and it removes a lot of stuff in the meta, like Ferris Spirits, almost all three drops from Varia. It's or a pretty good from Shaman. Card.
One drops from, you know, Shaman. You can always kill one drops as well with it. I think like the big downside of Deadly Poison is it was hailed as the staple card for the longest time, but you see that without Flurry, it's just not as appealing. Because even though you do kill something and it is quote-unquote card advantage, since you're creating a Fiery War Axe, you're taking so much damage in the process. And in the current state of Rogue, taking face damage is just... it feels even worse than it's ever felt, I think. Like, you have the one Farseer. Some people are running, like, two copies of it just to push it a bit further. But it, like, no matter how you build your deck, it's just so difficult to tank damage for no reason, given that everybody is playing burst finishers. And it feels like even the Zulist that you used to be able to... the love, in fact, like fighting off against, like they're running so much from hand burst now. It's so, and you can't stop it. Like, it's a race. I don't know. I'm not
okay.
Like, the other poison just feels like eventually a card that may phase out if rogues find alternatives.
Well, why don't we compare, like, at least the first two? Because sure. Yeah, they are generally miracle, the general miracle build. It's not like the dragon one, that's the third one. But they have different finishes. One's Malagus, and then one's just the Leroy that we've been talking about. Which one do you prefer, Yagut? Which one do you think is just generally more powerful?
I guess it really comes down to the meta. The second deck, the Malagus deck, has less dead cards. Like, it doesn't run like Core Blood, Conceal, Leroy. You have like cards that almost always do something for the board. So I like the second list a bit better. It has a little bit less burst. Like, it doesn't have so much burst, but...
it's pretty close. It sounds like it's pretty close.
Yeah, it seems a lot close. Worse in the mirror.
To be honest, I like the third deck a bit more that I made like 2 days ago.
Yeah, the Dragon so Rogue is more defensive, right? You probably have like more defensive potential compared to some of the other Miracle Rogue lists.
So Ray, yeah, you made a comment about mirror matchups. You made a comment about mirror matchups. Well, I guess what are the key elements for being good in the mirror?
I just conceal, I think.
Yeah.
Conceal Cold Blood's like very, very strong in the mirror. Mm-hmm. It'll usually win you your games. And just more burst is generally favorable too.
Okay.
Yeah, the mirror is interesting. Like, without Blade Flurry, the fact that you can just overextend if you ever get the chance to. Most of the time, you have 0-1 creatures, and you just spend the first turns playing stuff, killing stuff, playing stuff, killing stuff, and then eventually somebody conceals Gadgetzon and just ends the game.
Right.
So without Conceal Gadgetzon, you don't have that, like, turn 6 win condition, so...
okay.
You know, I would say the matchup's probably worse. The one thing I do want to point out here, though, like, are all three of these your decks, Yagu?
No.
Not the first one. I think the second two are first.
Okay, the thing... Sorry, yeah.
The first one is, like, something normal, right? It was always there since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the second one was almost always there as well, but I think it's Chess Dude's deck, if I'm not wrong.
Okay.
So... for me, the thing that stands out here in all of these decks is that they all play double Shiv, which is not a card that I would consider like a core two of, but here it is, a two of in every single one of these lists. So that's super interesting, actually. Just makes it so you have your important stuff on time more often, I guess. Or what do you think the reason is?
For the Miracle first deck with Leroy, it just had to find your gadgets and have a better gadgets in turn. For the second one, it's also for the gadgets and for a little bit Malagos burst. Mm. And for the third one, it's also again for Malagos and find your gadgets again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you seem to prefer the dragon one the most right now.
Because it doesn't have so many dead cards. You almost always have something to do.
Yeah, I mean, one of the cool things about it, too, is the fact that you do have access to the Twilight Guardians and the Chill Maw, which, even though it doesn't look like much, that's kind of your proxy heals. And given the way that Rogue is built right now, like, very often, Earthring Farseer as a one-of is not sufficient. Even if you start taking the tempo in the early game, like, you can get blown out by, like, an awful or an off-curve Gadgetzon. And I feel like those dragons would get you there more often than not. right? Like, you can always buy yourself an extra turn, which is enough as rogues just to close out the game.
Okay. That's definitely interesting, especially against a shaman matchup. I think any kind of taunt against a shaman matchup, I think, would be kind of nice, given Doomhammer is such a killer card. Okay, let's take a look at two more cards that involve, or decks that involved, some old gods. One being the Death Rattle archetype that has the N'Zoth at the end, and then the other is just one that Noxious threw out here, which is the C'Thun. That actually has a Yogg too, and I definitely have seen some more folks playing a C'Thun rogue.
Which, I think Pure C'Thun is a lot more powerful and consistent.
Yeah,
a lot more. But this is kind of a hybrid version. That's what I like about Rogue. I think is that the old gods, and these are not like, you know, top tier archetypes necessarily. But I like that the Rogue class can get away with running two old gods of their choice if they want to. Besides a Charge, like they can if they want, have like a mid tier deck with two old gods in it.
Yeah, Blade of C'Thun was always a card that I thought could be, you know, completely hit or miss depending on the meta. What are your thoughts on the card? Because it's essentially Assassinate that buffs your C'Thun as well as gives you a 4/4. Still bad given how things like Aggro Shaman and Zoo are still around.
Yagut's
thoughts.
About Blade of C'Thun, right?
Yeah.
I actually didn't try that card out yet. I don't know. I didn't try C'Thun out. It doesn't seem that great.
Compared to Miracle, it's pretty hard to play.
Blade of C'Thun seems a bit too slow, to be honest. That's why I didn't try it out. Like, I feel like you would just get outrushed by like Shaman and so on. Mm-hmm. And Blade of C'Thun will mostly just sit in your hand. Against control decks, it would be pretty good. Against like control or...
Okay.
Yeah, I actually tried C'Thun Rogue. It's pretty fun. I had double Blade of C'Thun because I wanted to make ridiculous C'Thuns, and it was actually like pretty good because most games you play at turn 8 because most games you have coin.
Yeah.
And it was a decent deck. It didn't really look like this list so much though. No, it was more.
I think I gave Chanaman an actual pure good C'Thun list. But this is the like a very hybridized.
Good is debatable, but yeah, it's like it's fun.
It's all right, sure.
Yeah, but some games you like every game you draw C'Thun, you basically win because the C'Thuns get if you play double blade, the C'Thuns get way bigger than you would think, like way bigger. It was actually I had the biggest C'Thuns of any deck I played with Rogue, which was strange.
Like what? Like 40 or.
Yeah,
dude.
Because Blade eats other C'Thuns.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god, yeah.
Pretty gross.
That is gross.
But yeah, the point is, it's like pretty fun. But some games you also like don't draw it, and you do have to play a pretty high minion density, so you don't always gadgets in for as many cards as you'd want. And
right.
But it's not bad. Like Blade of C'Thun is still a card that affects the board immediately, and you since so much of the rest of your deck is removal. Especially since you're playing Disciple, you can usually slow the game down enough to get to a point where you play Blade. As long as it's like mid-range Shaman. Against Aggro Shaman, you just get shit on.
But, yeah, that's right? Just a bad matchup. You can't do anything about that one.
Okay. I like the N'Zoth deck, though. I used to that a lot.
Yeah, let's talk about the N'Zoth deck. I think a lot of people, when the expansion first came out, everybody just, I think, went to N'Zoth Rogue because of things like Huckster and even Journey Below, you know, and just having a lot, even Zeril, they'll have a lot of these cards just naturally come back whenever you play N'Zoth. So power level of this right now, Yagut, is it a good deck or just so-so?
To be honest, it's pretty decent, but I don't like it too much in this meta because there are a lot of shamans and, well, there are also a lot of forests. Against forest, it's pretty good because you can get something good out of Journey Below, like Anubarak, and they will almost never be able to deal with it.
Yeah. Anubarak, yeah, that card. I've lost games to that card many times.
Yeah. So that's kind of the upside of Journey Below, though, is that you can tailor what you get to the meta, like to the matchup, and it's especially good now against control since Anubarak is a rogue card. Mm-hmm. Like you wouldn't put Anubarak in your deck, but if I could tell you that you can put that other card that is versatile and could give you that auto win against control, well, auto win. Let me rephrase that. a potential snowball card against control, you would probably do so. It's just so tough with Sylvanas, like to not pick something that's stronger in the neutral faction out of Journey Below over a Nubarak.
So one of the mistakes I did before the show is I didn't send in some rogue decks of my own, but there's actually a lot of unexplored territory because all of these decks are the same deck with just a different...
Sure, like it's the same Gatchaban, basically, yeah.
Yeah, it's just all the cards that actually matter are the same, and then it's just like different finishers.
Yeah.
But we've never had as many tools for Tempo Rogue as we do right now, and I've been playing a lot of different variants of that, and it's been a... I can probably send you one.
Just send me put it up here. It's cool.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed that wasn't in the Death Rattle deck while you're doing that is Raptor. So, you know, it's not there at all. And thought that was kind of interesting because I do play against some decks that do run it, even just on the Huckster. It's pretty, you know, it's not bad. It's a 3/4 that gives you something else, right? It's not a bad play. What do you guys think about Raptor in a Death Rattle Rogue?
It's way too situational. Like, it will mostly just sit in your hand, and it's kind of hard to use. And that also doesn't work with Zenzons, so I don't like that as well.
Okay.
That's posted cool. them in the general server.
Okay. Grab it.
But yeah, there's... I mean, this is just, like, stage one. I haven't even fully refined the tempo versions yet, but there's a lot to be done with them, I feel like, and we've just never had this many tools because there's so many cards that are great in Rogue right now that just aren't being thought of. Like Lowly Squire is an incredible one drop for Rogue. There's Silithid Swarmer, which is an incredible three drop. There's just a lot you can still do with Rogue, and personally I think Assassin's Blade is an incredible card. I like it a lot. There is a lot of Harrison and like some blowout value, but in this kind of deck, like if they play Harrison, they die.
Right.
So it's usually not the biggest deal.
Okay, so I have the deck up here, just at least in our little web viewer here.
Yeah. But the point is, you can do a lot with the deck that isn't being done right now, and there's just some completely different shells that don't involve Gadgetzon that I think have a lot of potential.
Okay, let me take a look at this one. All right, what do you guys think? What do you, Yagu, what do you think of this? This is obviously, you know, pirate style, this particular one.
And yeah, it's like...
Not all pirate, but there's some pirates in the beginning of it, and it's very aggressive.
The reason why I don't like this deck too much is because there are a lot of creatures with one health, and... the one health creatures are pretty easy to remove in this meta. I feel like you will almost always have a worse start than Shaman. Against Warrior, it will die to like Ghoul, Whirlwind, and Sun. So that's why I don't like this kind of rogue too much. You will just always have a worse start than most of the decks right now.
Okay. Noxious, what do you think?
Oh, it's interesting because like I look at the list and it's... Like, on the more aggressive side of what I tried, like, at DreamHack, Austin, when I was with Lothar, I gave him a rogue deck list to play while we were, you know, casting between games. And it was basically a tempo slash aggro rogue, but it ran a lot less of the one drops. And I'd like to try out that version because I'm curious to know if going more aggressive is more appropriate. Like, I gave you the list that I was piloting. And interestingly enough, I find that the whole Gadgetzon less playstyle works pretty damned well in Rogue right now. Like, I'm surprised, again, like Raina mentioned, that we haven't seen more of them come out since it's very reminiscent of the old school tempo without the reliance on stuff like Black Knight. You have to be more aggressive because you really don't have the ability to like the drag out a game, like let it just go on forever. But where's the good middle ground between aggression and like mid-range creatures is what I wonder.
What's the average length of this game, Ray, when you play this deck?
Six turns. I got a turn four kill on stream.
Oh my god!
I believe it.
Yeah.
This isn't really tempo. This is just as aggressive as you can make it. And this is just like Yagud said. This is usually just a strictly worse version of Shaman. The difference is you get a better hero power and backstab. You actually never lose early game board in any matchup, including Zoo. Because your hero power is the best early game hero power in the game. Backstab cheats in like creature on creature matchups. It just flips the board on its own, and like Lowly Squire beats everything in a fight. So it's actually much better than it looks for fighting for board control. But the reason it's weak is like Assassin's Blade is just a weaker card than Doomhammer. Lowly Squire is just a weaker card than Tunnel Trog. Defias is just a weaker card than Totem Golem. So there's some benefits in that people mulligan the wrong way against you. But if you're a streamer, those benefits go away. So yeah, it's potential though. I think there's a version where you like slow it down. There's just so many tools for Tempo Rogue right now. Like there's Bladed Cultist, which
there's too many, man. Like it's
I don't think it's that good of a card, but there's something there with that kind of archetype. Like there has to be a version of it.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Maybe one card or two cards missing.
And just like there were all the tools for Token Druid, and it took a while for like an actual competitive list of that to be discovered.
Yeah.
I think there's just too many tools for Tempo Rogue for us not to, like, at some point someone's going to hit rank one with like Tempo Rogue randomly. And then, 2 weeks later, it won't matter, but still. It'll be a glorious
week. Shaman, but for that week.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's take a look at this C'Thun, C'Thun Rogue here that you have. Let me bring it up real quick.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just the one I was playing. I think I was just playing Conceal because I felt like it's one of the strongest things Rogue can do right now, but this deck doesn't need to play Conceal. It might be wrong to play it. I actually like Yagut's idea of just playing Shiv. I think it's probably better.
Okay. Yeah, this is pretty much just more straight up. This is probably closer to what you sent me to, Noxious. I don't know about that.
I don't think it's... it's quite different. But the general idea is definitely there. It's pretty much always going to be around. Like, I don't run Gadgetzan Auctioneer. I think I'm running Double Sprint instead with two Drakes.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Might actually be better.
Yeah.
I like this kind of list with one Gadgetzan, one Sprint a little bit more.
The hybrid, I could agree with that. That's definitely one of the big things. Initially, I had one gadget, two sprints, then I cut one sprint, and then I tried out the gadget's hand, and half the time it didn't do enough, so I just ended up cutting it out. But I think going hybrid is always... For Rogue, I think it's just one of those things that's still difficult to nail down. Like, I never quite know whether or not I should be running two of one or one of each. Like, in what deck does that... Like, for instance, Yagut, like, why would you run one sprint, one gadget over two gadget's hands or two sprints? Like, what's the big difference?
Because you will not always be able to draw a lot of cards with gadgets, and that's why you would much rather have one gadget and sprint to get more cards, basically, out of the sprint.
So because you have too many minions in your deck, the quality of your gadget sound just goes down. Yeah, exactly. I guess.
Okay, that makes sense.
So why not two sprint? What times is gadgets better than sprint?
That's the question, right? That's like, in this deck, I went two sprints, and that's my... My big problem is, why would I put Gadge in the list?
That's a good point. Two sprints. I don't think that's so great, because like sometimes you don't have a turn six then if you run two sprints.
Okay, so you just want to play Gadge then on curve.
Right. So that's what it sounds like. Or at least that guarantee of
maybe like two sprints and Emperor is what's best.
Yeah, I'm running Emperor two sprints is what I'm running now.
Okay.
And sometimes you can also draw more than four cards out of gadgets, and sometimes you just draw almost your whole deck out of it in the late game.
What do you guys think of cards? What do you guys think of Bran? Just, I guess, in these kind of C'Thun decks, and
I had them twice in mine. I mean, it just seems like...
What about...
I would put three of them.
Yeah. Okay.
I think Thistle Tea is best.
Oh, Thistle Tea? Oh, wow. Okay.
Interesting.
It's kind of in this, a little bit in the sprint bucket there, right?
I think that's actually correct.
I kind of like that, actually. Yeah, that's I think not Thistle Tea's kind of cool. In this deck, you'll never run, like, you'll never find something you totally hate, I think, for the most part.
I feel like Thistle Tea is a bit too inconsistent, because sometimes you will get something useless, like, I don't know, like Backstab Prep.
Yeah, Prep's probably
maybe Fan of Ice. Like, I feel like it would be too inconsistent. Sometimes, I don't know. What would you really want to get? I guess three Keltoons. you will never be able to use Sweet Cat Tools anyways, right?
I'm okay with it. I mean, I don't mind. Like, in Cthulhu decks, I think it's one of those places where I would consider Thistle Tea. But again, Sprint just feels like a better option just because you're digging through those to those, like, actual answers, no matter what, even if you don't get copies of them.
I don't know. There's not that many cards you don't want in this deck.
We need to start playing Kidnapper is what we need to do, basically. So.
Kidnapper, oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff you can do with Rogue. Exactly. I encourage people to try some tempo lists.
Tempo, yes.
Yeah.
I think that might be the future of, like,
They're trying to get
a new tier 3 deck.
Yeah. Near 2-3?
Not even it wouldn't be tier 1.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Of course not.
Well, right. Tier 2 or 3 is good. If Priest can't even get there, then I'll take a tempo.
If Priest can't get there, then okay. All right, guys. Well, why don't we wrap up? That's definitely gone way over than originally intended. So, Yagu, thanks for stopping by and hanging out with us. This is the first time you've been on the show, so really cool. We're getting a lot of first-timers recently, so definitely a huge fan of your deck building, your stream, just everything for a long time now. So thanks. Thanks a lot.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Any shout-outs you want to do before you take off?
Shout-outs to you, I guess, Shannon.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
That's the beauty about not having a team, guys. He doesn't have to give shout-outs to anybody.
Well, nobody
does, sponsor.
Really.
What do you mean nobody does? Of course you should, right? I mean, like Ray. Yes.
Well, Ray's the team owner.
I don't have to. What do you mean have to?
You don't have to.
What kind of person would not take pride in delivering the public service of 10% savings to the populace?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
All right, Noxious. Oh, God. Do shout outs?
No, nothing really. Just thanks for the conversation today about beyond even Hearthstone. I think it's nice sometimes to have a conversation about stuff that's going on in the scene, and it was kind of cool to listen to a lot of the feedback or points of view, I guess.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that obviously all the viewers just enjoyed the conversation, or maybe started thinking about different things. But that did come about like last minute, so I tried my best just to try to organize it as quickly as possible. So, but it's that's what we do. Like, I want to make sure on the show that we talk about everything like involved with Hearthstone, not just the game. Reyna, shout outs.
Shout outs to Twitch for being the best streaming platform. Shout outs to G2A for wonderful game savings. Shout out to Mr. Yagut for being here. It was awesome. My apologies for the fact that we were using Discord, which had all these
come
issues
on. Oh, man.
That Curse would never have, because it is a wonderful, wonderful client that I would also like to give a shout out to. And shout out to Noxious. It was a good show. I liked it. It was fun.
All right. And
last thing.
Boy.
We got new shirts finally. I don't know. I think they look pretty cool. It's like a very small webcam thingy, but you guys should pick them up.
All right. Same material as the other one, the most recent one too, right? The sky one.
Yeah.
The material is actually pretty good on your shirts, man. I definitely like that. Yeah. Check it out. Okay. For me, big shout out to three of you guys for doing the show. It's a lot of fun. All the viewers too for checking out the show or watching. Hopefully there's some first timers too. You can check out the VOD after the show, an hour or so, maybe an hour and a half at youtube.com/chainmanv. I want to thank Tempestorm for sponsoring the show, as well as their sponsors, which Raynats already giving a shout out to. And for those that want to support the show as well, you can support the show on patreon.com/valuetown. And I did want to give a shout out just to a few of the patrons that do support: CJ Hines, Shane Sherman, Lucas Capdeville, Jacob Sebastian Fell, Paul Hatchman, Eric Cobb, Nicholas Larivere. Thanks a lot for doing that. And as well as all the iTunes listeners too. Lots of folks listen to this on iTunes and Android and Google podcasts too. Want to give a shout out to Tempest22 and JazzCap for leaving reviews and a 5-star rating. Helps the show in a big way. So if you don't have any money to give or anything like that, just leave a 5-star rating. That actually helps a lot of people discover the show. That's going to be it for Valuetown. So for Mr. Yagut, Noxious, Raynad, and myself, Chainman V, we'll see you next week. Later.